In one of the biggest consumer settlements ever, Volkswagen agrees to buy back its rigged diesel cars with cash on top. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Multiple published reports today say Volkswagen has agreed to pay $14.7 billion to settle with consumers who bought VW and Audi cars with the small diesel engines designed to cheat emissions tests and overpollute. This covers 475,000 cars, mainly in the U.S. This gives VW owners a useful option if they don't want VW to try to fix their cars, which could reduce the vehicle's performance. On the line from Ann Arbor to help us with this is Eric Gordon, a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, David.
So this is interesting. Volkswagen is proposing, especially in the U.S., to buy back the car if you want to sell it, plus extra cash, $5,100 to maybe $10,000, depending on the car. The consumer who was stuck with one of these diesels might end up doing okay.
Yeah, you know, they might actually come out ahead, and they have a little time to think about it. They sort of have an option for reportedly up to 2 years to decide whether they want to keep the car and get some kind of fix plus money, or sell the car back to Volkswagen and get some money.
It's interesting. They're going to value the car at the pre-scandal values. I think that's key. But, you know, if you have a 2010 Jetta TDI diesel wagon, and I don't know what its blue book is going to be worth, but let's say it's 10 grand, and let's say you get 7, 8, or 9 grand on top of that, I guess that's the decent down payment on a new car. You don't get a full new car, though.
Yeah, you don't get a full new car. So for some people, it'll still be an imposition. And you can guess that those will be the people who keep their car, get a fix, and take some cash. But for some people, it means you get a new car a year or two earlier.
Eric, what accounts for the size of this? I mean, the BP oil settlement was slightly bigger, but this is massive. It's because of the gravity of what's happened to the environment and what was done to consumers, I guess.
It's partly the environmental impact, and it's partly that there is clear evidence of actual intentional wrongdoing as opposed to possibly just being massively incompetent.
And also the government is involved here, and the U.S. government, the regulators, seem extremely unhappy, and they have some tools at their disposal.
Yeah, they carry a big blackjack in their back pocket. They can, in this case, bring criminal charges, including criminal charges against probably pretty high-level individuals. So in these negotiations, it's a little different than in your typical class action. In your typical class action, you end up with, you know, a check for $1.43 or a free concert ticket to a concert you would never go to. In this one, having the government on your side of the table meant you walk away with a lot more than is typical.
Eric Gordon at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Always good to talk to you. Eric, thanks.
My pleasure, David.
There are still other legal cases against VW grinding away both here in the U.S. and abroad, where 11 million cars are affected around the world. People who offloaded their polluting diesels in the U.S. after the scandal broke are still eligible for compensation from VW, but at a much reduced rate. Now back to the British public ordering the country out of the European Union. The UK Prime Minister David Cameron is headed to Brussels today to meet with European leaders. He'll, quote, explain the situation over what should prove to be quite a dinner there as Britain and the rest of Europe grapples with what to do next. One option for a continued trade relationship with the EU is the so-called Norway model. Pro-Brexit UK officials have pointed to that model as an example of a successful trade relationship. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on how this might work.
Norway is not a member of the European Union, but through things like the European Economic Area Agreement and European Free Trade, it maintains a very close trade relationship with the rest of the continent. That relationship is key to its economy. So maybe this is the move for the newly independent British.
The Norwegian government has come out very often, quite clearly telling British counterparts, look, you're not going to like the Norwegian model.
Fiona Hill is director of the Center on the United States and Europe at the Brookings Institution.
It's very expensive for us. We have to adhere to an awful lot of EU regulation for our products and our exports, and we don't have a say.
Norway also allows the free movement of residents in the European Economic Area and EU without passport checks. That is part of the trade agreements. Michael Geary is a global fellow at the Wilson Center.
The Norwegian model in its purity simply would not work for David Cameron's successor. They will want to have limits on the amount of workers moving into Britain because, of course, this is really what has been dominating the debate.
It's also a tough comparison because Norway is a pretty affluent country, thanks in large part to oil. And there are only 5 million people living there. In the UK, 64 million. The Norwegian model might be something for British officials to look at, but copying it isn't likely to work. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
News of Britain's decision to leave the EU has gone over pretty badly in many global business lines. Yesterday we covered banking and automotive, but there's at least one industry where this could be a windfall. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace has more on why lawyers might be celebrating Brexit.
Yep, your very favorite people are licking their chops right now. And by licking their chops, I mean fielding a bunch of panicky calls from clients.
Short term, this is a gold rush.
Paula Stern is a consultant who used to chair the U.S. International Trade Commission. She says pretty much any multinational is going to have legal questions about regulation, trade, mergers and acquisitions. Bruce McEwen, a law industry consultant, agrees there's a ton of fine print. For example, lots of deals negotiated in the past year have a clause in them that says, here's what happens in case of Brexit.
Well, nobody thought those clauses were ever going to be invoked, but guess what?
More business for lawyers. But Paula Stern says there is a limit to that.
It's certainly not a gift that's going to keep on giving.
Because, she says, any overall slowdown in clients' business isn't ultimately good for the bloodsuckers, or I mean lawyers anyway. I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
Lewis apologized for that. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Christopher Olin. Our engineer this week is Chris Clark. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.